jail, and you just gotta let all this stuff go.
Okay, we're rolling again. Here, and back up Bathrobes Pierre on the line.
Hi there, everybody.
Who's eager to see what's going on in the Sentinel. Get the excitement of me trotting out here in my front yard to pick
you
up the Sentinel.
Record your footsteps.
We are doing that just for the excitement and thrill of our listeners. Sounds of me getting my morning senile. I don't know how I can get my brain working properly without my morning senile. Oh, it's always so exciting. Actually, it's kind of like a little bit of dread every time I open the Sentinel.
It's probably the worst newspaper up and down the coast. the worst daily newspaper. I think it really has that distinction. I have not seen a worse newspaper.
It's slanted and missing a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it's completely inaccurate on local stuff, too. You'll read that city council meetings are in places and times they're not supposed to be, and other times there'll be meetings you never heard of that or that happen that you're supposed to have written up and they haven't in the public affairs section.
And you're not on the front page again.
That's the problem. They really miss the major stories.
Yeah.
I hope we're not putting this on the air. I'm going to be mortified when I come back to town. You've got to put news on the air. News or exciting interplay. This is low-key badinage.
Well, I had a really exciting interview to do with one of our named defendants, and the tape player screwed up, so we're stuck with low-key stuff.
Oh, really? Well, you might put through a quick call to Catherine Byers and interview her on a couple of items, what the Farmers Market, Downtown Association, change machines, the City Hall sleepout. Why she refuses to go into declarations, make statements in court that she's otherwise made, what she intends to do to make sure the First Amendment survives. Santa Cruz. There are plenty of people you can also talk to, like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has a meeting tomorrow with the City Council's Social Services Subcommittee. You could call Jane Yokoyama and ask her what she intends to do if the figures for the CCH's $150,000 bridge loan that they got with a snap of the fingers from the City Council about a month and a half ago, don't add up, as they haven't at the only meeting they've ever appeared at, that the Citizens Committee has ever appeared at, the Social Services Subcommittee, and you were present at that meeting, I think. You were there, right?
Yes, I was.
And then they canceled the next three meetings, and then suddenly here they are again, looking for bucks. You might do an interview on that subject. I mean, you can only squeeze so much blood out of an orange, and we are pretty orange here in our little jumpsuits in jail. So there's time. Usually some of my most profitable interviews are quick interviews in the morning. I suggest you call Karen Gillette at 458-6020 and ask her about the upsurge, or if any, or ongoing troll busting, and whether the Homeless Community Resource Center is doing anything around the proposed sleeping ban modifications that we so diligently and eloquently brought to their attention 4 months ago.
Well, you know, Robert, it's not lack of ideas that is causing these interviews to not necessarily have taken place yet.
Lack of time?
It's, of course. Time is what's our most valuable commodity, which is why what you're noticing now, being in prison, how they take away your time.
Right, although... True, it does take away your time, although you seem to have lots and lots of it. It stretches before you endlessly when you're in jail. But, as I say, for someone who's doing this kind of work, and I encourage you to get some help from other people, you might put out a call for volunteers for Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Perhaps there's an increased interest in the show for this period of time because of my jailing. Have them give you a call and a volunteer to help. I'm sure you could use some research assistance, someone who wants to track down the black history of Judge Bumbuster Barclay, the judge who sent me to jail. Hang on, we're fading out. There we go. Or possibly interview the friendly Frank Buselic.
Well, I've read the entire Sentinel now.
see.
While you were speaking, and there's absolutely nothing in it.
Well, it's, tell me something I don't already know. Yeah. No, I'm interested in I don't usually use the Sentinel in preparations for the show much, except I look at it briefly. The Mercury News in the morning, on Monday morning, has the exciting Lee Kornstrom column, which occasionally, you know, has a barrage of bile against bums, as he puts it.
Yeah, Lee has special affection for you.
Yeah, he usually has a little comment every month or two on the King of the Bums.
Uh-huh.
He no longer refers to me by name, but so by title.
So you've been getting any hate mails from some of your less than avid supporters?
No hate mail. In fact, no mail from anyone I don't know. It's all completely predictable mail from people who've...
No letters from Mike? No letters from Scott? No letters from Neil Coonerty?
They have maintained a dignified silence, or perhaps contained their joy at my departure from the scene.
Yes, and I guess Robert Hall is also another big fan of yours.
Oh, yeah, Robert, misguided supporter of Scott Kennedy in this matter, but otherwise, a good man. Bad concern with liberal causes. Too bad he's jumped on board Kennedy's bandwagon.
Yeah, Scott Kennedy is truly an enigma. I mean, here he founded the Resource Center for Nonviolence and has made some rather courageous stands at city council on some of the more progressive issues. And yet when he comes to these downtown ordinances or the sleeping ban, he's just not there. In fact, being one of the council members that voted for the injunction, you could say he's against homeless people.
Well, he certainly doesn't like being pushed and embarrassed. Rotkin responds with this amiable line of deflective patter that's frequently filled with misrepresentations and falsehoods, and hopefully we can get some more specifics on that throughout the next week. I've asked Ocean Newman of the Berkeley Citizens Police Review Board, a former police review board commissioner and a lawyer. Mr. Newman is an attorney who's covered a lot of civil rights cases in Berkeley, and I've asked him to educate Mayor Rotkin on the fact that there are other cities in the state that do in fact allow people to sleep in public, on the streets, outside, without arresting them, both in terms of their law and in terms of their policy. Berkeley is one of those cities, although they do periodic sweeps and they do harass homeless people. You know, that does happen nonetheless. Their laws state that specifically allow people to sleep, or the exclusion is only between the hours of 7 in the morning and 10 at night, 6 feet from a shop, under the newly passed Proposition O.
Now, it's in Berkeley?
That's in Berkeley, and that was passed in 1994, and it was put on hold, so it is not working. It's not in effect, and the...
So if it were in effect,
there would still be people to sleep at night, yeah.
People could sleep at night, but not in the daytime.
So not in their cars.
But not...
Ironically, it's legal for people to sleep on the streets, but not in their vehicles. That's called living in a vehicle, and it's been illegal for, a decade or two, and poverty activists have been trying to get that one reformed for a long time without much success. But according to Newman, who I've asked to contact Rotkin, and as I said, inform him of the facts in Berkeley, it is legal not just to sleep in Berkeley, but in various other cities. And Rotkin has made a big point of the fact that Santa Cruz's detailed and specific ban on sleeping at night is anomaly in the state of California, that it's some sort of normal, average thing. In fact,
that every town has it. Yeah, it's basically been his rap.
More liberal by specifying it, and so limiting the police or making people aware what they're likely to face, that sort of thing. It's candy-coated poo-poo, actually. It has nothing to do with the reality of the case, which is it's an anti-homeless law, and Rodney hasn't got the guts to challenge it, and that's the problem.
Robert, I spoke to Mike Sheridan yesterday.
Michael Sheridan of the River Street Refugees.
That's correct. He was
formerly the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Yeah, and he's a very opinionated and educated person.
I hope you got an interview with him on tape.
I did not.
Pity.
And he was talking about how in Santa Cruz, he thought that we needed some place, not so much a campground, but a place where people who live in their vehicles could legally park. He thought that that was the most kind of like efficient Band-Aid
well,
solution.
Naturally, Michael lives in his vehicle.
And he was pointing out that there's a huge number of people in Santa Cruz who do live in their vehicles.
Well, there are a number, including our guest of a week or two ago, Jim Pucell, who was fighting in court to deal with a sleeping ban and challenge it on the grounds that, that there should be different rules for people who live in their vehicles. I'm a little wary of separating these classes of people, you know, because I think it's sort of one struggle, but it is true that in 1988, when I circulated a thing called the Petition for Homeless Rights, we got 3,000 or 4,000 signatures, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 signatures, I'm not sure, lots of signatures, 50 pages of petitions that we gave to the city council, which are all recorded in the minutes of some fall city council meeting in 1988, and was, of course, dutifully ignored, never even mentioned by the city council in any subsequent discussion or debate. And Mike Rotkin was on that city council, and he never said anything about it. But we made the mistake of, or not the mistake, we took a very mild step. We suggested people who were sleeping in their vehicles be ticketed only on complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is the policy that supposedly, Rotkin says, goes for the entire city of Santa Cruz, whether in your vehicle or not. That is a twofold policy. He said that people are only ticketed if, A, there's been a complaint about that particular person sleeping, or, B, if it's an area where there's usually problems. So the police patrol it regularly and give tickets in that area. Though how you would know that there are problems in that area if you just come to town and you sleep there, I don't know. And I've met numerous people who've gotten tickets in Santa Cruz without warnings. And of course, the whole business of telling someone that it's illegal for them to sleep, but there is no legal place for them to sleep, is
a surprise to the visitors who come here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of people who come to Santa Cruz who are not homeless, but they're visiting from somewhere else, and maybe they don't have enough money to stay in a motel.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would be totally unaware of what our ordinances are.
Until, of course, they get socked with them, and then they get to wander around the courts looking dazed and come back to several court appearances or pay a huge $162 bail fine to get the ticket out of the way. Quite a thing, and it's been the cause of literally days of rhetoric, hours and hours and hours of rhetoric in my time in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt will be for many more, but maybe what I should do is encourage you to make a few more phone calls before your airtime, so you can get a couple more other, you know, variegated views. There's also the Police Review Board, which opens up at 9. Actually, Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board is very accessible, and he can tell you what the latest is around about against the police department policies that are being considered. The Police Review Board is another one of the Kennedy victims. It was originally proposed as a much stronger thing, and Kennedy delayed and weakened it over the years.
Kennedy, really?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I think the Citizens Police Review Board has been particularly ineffective, and there was even a article in the, I guess it was the Sentinel, in the editorial,
yeah,
where they were recommending abolishing it because all the complaints had been exonerated, or, well, I mean, not all of them, but the vast majority of complaints that had come through.
Well, the sad thing is, when you get a copy of your complaint back, you get no indication of any kind of process that happened or any kind of discussion or any sense of what really went on. You get exactly the same kind of form you got 3 or 4 years ago when the police chief sent you a blanket form which said, we have reviewed your complaint and found it to be unfounded or ungrounded or whatever you will. I think there are four classifications, unfounded, exonerated, sustained, and some fourth classification. But it's all, the only value of the Police Review Board is there now is a record of complaints, and presumably they could be subpoenaed. I know that in court there's a thing called a Pitches motion, which enables you to determine if there have been internal affairs complaints against police officers who are currently witnesses in the case to show that they have a disposition to violence or lying or some kind of a prejudice from based on the past record.
So even though the Citizens Police Review Board is sort of the Fox guarding the chicken house in terms of what happens to these complaints when they're filed, you still recommend people to file complaints against the police?
And to call Nutcracker Nick, whom I worked with for a number of years, who has an organization called SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. He can also keep records of these things and does. But I recommend people file complaints, not with any expectation that there's going to be any significant response, but simply to get the thing on the record. Although, ironically, as you know, when a complaint is filed, it becomes confidential. And the only way to actually pull it out is to wait until it goes through the internal affairs process and comes out the other end. And even then, the police officer's name is blacked out of the complaint. I mean, it's a completely skewed system. If an individual, if you have a charge filed against you by a court, even if you're exonerated, that is on record. But charges against cops are not on record unless a specific Pitches court motion is filed to unearth that.
I think it's a very Orwellian process.
Oh, yeah, no question. But, the fact is, for some of these grotesquely hidebound legalistic liberals, it's the only way to persuade them that the normal channels have been followed and are lacking, although most of us who've been observing this know that that was the case years ago, and that this is a complete waste of time, or a major waste of time anyway. But as I suggest, if you call up Gary, he often has interesting updates for those who follow this. And Police Review Board, the public part of the Police Review Board meeting happens once every month. I guess the first or the second Monday. And I think there's a city council meeting coming up tomorrow, too.
That's correct. Afternoon session and an evening session.
You've probably gotten the agenda, have you?
And I have not.
You might want to go down and get a copy of the agenda.
Tell our viewers where they can find this agenda.
At City Clerk's office. But viewers won't do it. I mean, listeners won't do it. You have to do it and put it on the radio and specify what the issue is, and then maybe they'll come to the council. I mean, that's my experience.
You have such great confidence in free radio listeners.
This is what people... Who wants to wander down to City Hall and wander through pages and pages of an agenda? Somebody has to do it for most people. On top of that, you're going to go to the city council meeting. What are you going to hear? You're going to hear the same oblivious interactions between council members who are, in most cases, paying very little attention to the input of the public. And it will cut you off if you try to speak for any length of time.
Now, Lee Kornstrom said that city council meetings were getting to be quite watchable on Channel 72, that there were so many... sparks and excitement.
That's right. See, that's where people will watch them, Becky, on Channel 72. If you want them to come to them, you have to get the agenda and explicate the issues. Otherwise, they won't go down. They will watch on Channel 72 if they'll do anything.
Well, I do know that at the afternoon session on tomorrow, that they will be discussing the money for Community House. That's one of the issues that will be coming up.
Oh, really? I know that's being discussed in the morning at the subcommittee.
Yeah, and then...
8:15 of the city manager.
Right, and then they're going to be voting in the afternoon. It's all, so they've already pre-decided.
Right. Well, I think that's why it's important that people want to discuss the whole issue of the city council's dumping $150,000 into the Community House project when there is nothing for a campground. And when the Citizens Committee has shown itself incredibly inept in running a campground and a violator of the faith of homeless people in closing the campground, and then apparently unable to balance their figures in doing Community House, and even if they could, in presenting a project which serves a small number of people at a great cost in a rather regulated environment that is, supposedly drug-free. It looks mainly like sort of a job funding effort for some middle class bureaucrats and a fund magnet for more federal money. I mean, I don't know. People should look it over closely.
Well, one thing that I think people should be aware of, and when I spoke to Karen Gillette, she discussed the difference between a clean and sober program and one that has no such requirement. Now, on the face, you might think, homeless people have a lot of trouble with drugs and alcohol. It would be better to have a clean and sober program. And I suppose in an ideal world, this would be true. However, the logistics of actually putting that forth means that you have to have a fence around the entire facility, you have to have guards, you have to be checking people's possessions as they go in and out.
It costs a lot more, is what she was saying.
She said it would cost 25-fold
uh-huh.
as much.
Right, right.
Sure. And when there really are plenty of laws that regulate public intoxication or possession of narcotics and that sort of thing, that could be enforced in a homeless campground just as well as they're enforced in a homed community.
Yeah, that's true enough.
So I don't know if the public is 25 times more excited about making sure that homeless people don't have a beer.
Uh-huh, right. Yeah. Well, thank you for this interview, Becky, and I hope that, people do go to the council meeting tomorrow, to the Social Services Subcommittee tomorrow morning at 8:15 at the city manager's office. And I hope you can, maybe get some volunteers to write letters to the Chronicle, the Examiner, and the Sentinel about the absurdity of jailing someone for free food, or for that matter, the Sentinel, the absurdity of arresting people and charging them with 6 months jail sentence for one act of sleeping in City Hall, one act of cooking, preparing, or storing food, one act of having a sign more than 14 inches. And I hope that you can find someone to help you do research and interviews, because I may be interesting to a certain extent, but we're running around the same stuff, you and I, on these interviews, and I feel that you really need, or that the audience really needs to have...
fresh stuff.
Got it. Fresh people.
Well, bring up some of those interesting felons that you're sleeping with these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, sleeping with the enema, that's what we call it here.
Thank you, Bathrobes Pierre from jail.
All right.
You're listening to Free Radio, Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Hi, we're talking with Nick Whitehead from
SPAN.
What does SPAN stand for?
It stands for Stop Police Abuse Now.
And you think there's a need for that here in Santa Cruz County?
Yeah, there always has been. Ever since the Police Review Commission was set up, there's been less obvious police violence or police offenses against the public. But I think that may be changing lately. When you saw the pepper gas incident in the court, outside the court, then you realize that every now and then the police can explode in some strange action.
Yeah, that was a real wild morning there outside of Judge Stevens' court on the 19th of June. It was kind of an interesting take in the Sentinel, at least as far as what the police said. The police said that Patrick Ring had refused to leave the courtroom area when everyone who was there witnessed that he was in the process of leaving and was prevented from leaving the court area because he basically was assaulted by 5 police officers, including the pepper spray.
Yeah.
And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the use of pepper spray.
Yeah. The pepper gas itself is not officially approved in any permanent sense for use in the state of California. It's on a temporary trial use throughout the state.
And have there been some deaths associated with use of pepper spray?
Yeah, under circumstances of people having drugs in their system, or being surrounded by a crowd so they couldn't breathe, or being half-strangled by a cop who had a certain grip on them or was sitting on their chest. Under those conditions, it can cause death, and it has done so in about 25 instances statewide.
Wow, that sounds pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
And yet the police tend to use it rather liberally because they feel it does no permanent harm?
Yeah, but there's no medical evidence that it doesn't cause permanent harm, and there's some emerging that it may cause permanent harm. And so this stuff is not to be compared with mace, the old gas, which was much more medically tested. There was more knowledge about it. See, the pepper gas is a new product. It was designed for military use. The main manufacturer in the state of California is Defense Technologies Corporation. So this was designed for riot control in military situations to suppress probably civilians in third world countries, I would think.
Oh, joy.
Yeah.
So you think that the pepper grass should be put on hold until further testing is done?
Yeah, because it only gained approval because the FBI did some tests and authorized its use by police agencies. But since then, it's been found that the FBI agent who was put in charge of that project took a $57,000 bribe from the manufacturers of pepper gas. This has been legitimately proven and brought out by the ACLU. And so the ACLU is now recommending that the entire process be reviewed, that all the results be invalidated, start all over again, suspend the use of it, and let's find out more about it before anybody's allowed to use this ever again.
Hmm. And who made the decision locally to use pepper gas? Do you know that?
Well, I think it was the Berkeley and San Francisco police had it first. L.A. may have been even before them. And then a little bit later, the Santa Cruz police had it in their hands. I don't know which official. But since our police chief is FBI trained himself, I'm sure that once he saw the FBI approved it, he probably started going for it.
Santa Cruz City Police?
Yeah.
Steve Belcher?
He's FBI trained.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, Nick Whitehead, thank you for that pepper gas update. And I'm sure free radio listeners are always interested in knowing what's really going on here in our lovely little town. Thank you.
All right.